Disc 7.
Chapter 73. David Becker felt as if his face had been doused in turpentine and ignited. He rolled over the floor and squinted through bleary tunnel vision at the girl halfway to the revolving doors. She was running in short, terrified bursts, dragging her duffel behind her across the tile. Becker tried to pull himself to his feet, but he could not. He was blinded by red-hot fire. She can't get away. He tried to call out, but there was no air in his lungs, only a sickening pain.
No,
he coughed. The sound barely left his lips. Becker knew the second she went through the door, she would disappear forever. He tried to call out again, but his throat was searing. The girl had almost reached the revolving door. Becker staggered to his feet, gasping for breath. He stumbled after her. The girl dashed into the first compartment of the revolving door, dragging her duffel behind her. 20 yards back, Becker was staggering blindly toward the door.
Wait!
He gasped.
Wait!
The girl pushed furiously on the inside of the door. The door began to rotate, but then it jammed. The blonde wheeled in terror and saw her duffel snagged in the opening. She knelt and pulled furiously to free it. Becker fixed his bleary vision on the fabric protruding through the door. As he dove, the red corner of nylon protruding from the crack was all he could see. He flew toward it, arms outstretched. As David Becker fell toward the door, his hands only inches away, the fabric slipped into the crack and disappeared. His fingers clutched empty air as the door lurched into motion. The girl and the duffel tumbled into the street outside.
Megan!
Becker wailed as he hit the floor. White-hot needles shot through the back of his eye sockets. His vision tunneled to nothing, and a new wave of nausea rolled in. His own voice echoed in the blackness.
Megan!
David Becker wasn't sure how long he'd been lying there before he became aware of the hum of fluorescent bulbs overhead. Everything else was still. Through the silence came a voice. Someone was calling. He tried to lift his head off the floor. The world was cockeyed, watery. Again the voice. He squinted down the concourse and saw a figure 20 yards away.
Mister?
Becker recognized the voice. It was the girl. She was standing at another entrance farther down the concourse, clutching her duffel to her chest. She looked more frightened now than she had before.
Mister?
She asked, her voice trembling.
I never told you my name. How come you know my name?
Chapter 74. Director Leland Fontaine was a mountain of a man, 63 years old, with a close-cropped military haircut and a rigid demeanor. His jet-black eyes were like coal when he was irritated, which was almost always. He'd risen through the ranks of the NSA through hard work, good planning, and the well-earned respect of his predecessors. He was the first African-American director of the National Security Agency, but nobody ever mentioned the distinction. Fontaine's politics were decidedly colorblind, and his staff wisely followed suit. Fontaine had kept Midge and Brinkerhoff standing as he went through the silent ritual of making himself a mug of Guatemalan Java. Then he'd settled at his desk, left them standing, and questioned them like schoolchildren in the principal's office. Midge did the talking, explaining the unusual series of events that led them to violate the sanctity of Fontaine's office.
A virus? The director asked coldly. You two think we've got a virus?
Brinkerhoff winced.
Yes, sir, Midge snapped.
Because Strathmore bypassed Gauntlet?
Fontaine eyed the printout in front of him.
Yes, she said. And there's a file that hasn't broken in over 20 hours.
Fontaine frowned.
Or so your data says.
Midge was about to protest, but she held her tongue. Instead, she went for the throat.
There's a blackout in crypto.
Fontaine looked up, apparently surprised. Midge confirmed with a curt nod.
All power's down. Jabba thought maybe...
You called Jabba?
Yes, sir, I...
Jabba?
Fontaine stood up, furious.
Why the hell didn't you call Strathmore?
We did, Midge defended. He said everything was fine.
Fontaine stood, his chest heaving.
Then we have no reason to doubt him.
There was closure in his voice. He took a sip of coffee.
Now, if you'll excuse me, I have work to do.
Midge's jaw dropped.
I beg your pardon?
Brinkerhoff was already headed for the door, but Midge was cemented in place.
I said good night, Miss Milken,
Fontaine repeated.
You are excused.
But, sir, she stammered, I have to protest. I think...
You protest?
The director demanded. He set down his coffee.
I protest. I protest to your presence in my office. I protest to your insinuations that the deputy director of this agency is lying. I protest...
We have a virus, sir. My instincts tell me...
Well, your instincts are wrong, Miss Milken. For once, they're wrong.
Midge stood fast.
But, sir, Commander Strathmore bypassed Gauntlet.
Fontaine strode toward her, barely controlling his anger.
That is his prerogative. I pay you to watch analysts and service employees, not spy on the deputy director. If it weren't for him, we'd still be breaking codes with pencil and paper. Now leave me.
He turned to Brinkerhoff, who stood in the doorway, colorless and trembling.
Both of you.
With all due respect, sir, Midge said, I'd like to recommend we send a SysSec team to Crypto just to ensure...
We will do no such thing.
After a tense beat, Midge nodded.
Very well. Good night.
She turned and left. As she passed, Brinkerhoff could see in her eyes that she had no intention of letting this rest. Not until her intuition was satisfied. Brinkerhoff gazed across the room at his boss, massive and seething behind his desk. This was not the director he knew. The director he knew was a stickler for detail, for neatly tied packages. He always encouraged his staff to examine and clarify any inconsistencies in daily procedure, no matter how minute. And yet here he was, asking them to turn their backs on a very bizarre series of coincidences. The director was obviously hiding something, but Brinkerhoff was paid to assist, not to question. Fontaine had proven over and over that he had everyone's best interests at heart. If assisting him now meant turning a blind eye, then so be it. Unfortunately, Midge was paid to question, and Brinkerhoff feared she was headed for Crypto to do just that.
Time to get out the resumes, Brinkerhoff thought. As he turned to the door.
Chad!
Fontaine barked from behind him. Fontaine had seen the look in Midge's eyes when she left.
Don't let her out of this suite.
Brinkerhoff nodded and hustled after Midge. Fontaine sighed and put his head in his hands. His sable eyes were heavy. It had been a long, unexpected trip home. The past month had been one of great anticipation for Leland Fontaine. There were things happening right now at the NSA that would change history, and ironically, Director Fontaine had found out about them only by chance. 3 months ago, Fontaine had gotten news that Commander Strathmore's wife was leaving him. He'd also heard reports that Strathmore was working absurd hours and seemed about to crack under the pressure. Despite differences of opinion with Strathmore on many issues, Fontaine had always held his deputy director in the highest esteem. Strathmore was a brilliant man, maybe the best the NSA had. At the same time, ever since the Skipjack fiasco, Strathmore had been under tremendous stress. It made Fontaine uneasy. The commander held a lot of keys around the NSA, and Fontaine had an agency to protect. Fontaine needed someone to keep tabs on the wavering Strathmore and make sure he was 100%. But it was not that simple. Strathmore was a proud and powerful man. Fontaine needed a way to check up on the commander without undermining his confidence or authority. Fontaine decided, out of respect for Strathmore, to do the job himself. He had an invisible tap installed on Commander Strathmore's crypto account. His email, his interoffice correspondence, his brainstorms, all of it. If Strathmore was going to crack, the director would see warning signs in his work. But instead of signs of a breakdown, Fontaine uncovered the groundwork for one of the most incredible intelligence schemes he'd ever encountered. It was no wonder Strathmore was busting his ass. If he could pull this plan off, it would make up for the Skipjack fiasco 100 times over. Fontaine had concluded Strathmore was fine, working at 110%, as sly, smart, and patriotic as ever. The best thing the director could do would be to stand clear and watch the commander work his magic. Strathmore had devised a plan. A plan Fontaine had no intention of interrupting. Chapter 75. Strathmore fingered the Beretta in his lap. Even with the rage boiling in his blood, he was programmed to think clearly. The fact that Greg Hale had dared lay a finger on Susan Fletcher sickened him, but the fact that it was his own fault made him even sicker. Susan going into Node 3 had been his idea. Strathmore knew enough to compartmentalize his emotion. It could in no way affect his handling of Digital Fortress. He was the deputy director of the National Security Agency, and today his job was more critical than it had ever been. Strathmore slowed his breathing.
Susan?
His voice was efficient and unclouded.
Did you delete Hale's email?
No, she said, confused.
Do you have the passkey?
She shook her head. Strathmore frowned, chewing his lip. His mind was racing. He had a dilemma. He could easily enter his elevator password, and Susan would be gone. But he needed her there. He needed her help to find Hale's passkey. Strathmore hadn't told her yet, but finding that passkey was far more than a matter of academic interest. It was an absolute necessity. Strathmore suspected he could run Susan's nonconformity search and find the passkey himself, but he'd already encountered problems running her tracer. He was not about to risk it again.
Susan, he sighed resolutely, I'd like you to help me find Hale's passkey.
What?
Susan stood up, her eyes wild. Strathmore fought off the urge to stand along with her. He knew a lot about negotiating. The position of power was always seated. He hoped she would follow suit. She did not.
Susan, sit down.
She ignored him.
Sit down.
It was an order. Susan remained standing.
Commander, if you've still got some burning desire to check out Tancato's algorithm, you can do it alone. I want out.
Strathmore hung his head and took a deep breath. It was clear she would need an explanation. She deserves one, he thought. Strathmore made his decision. Susan Fletcher would hear it all. He prayed he wasn't making a mistake.
Susan, he began, it wasn't supposed to come to this.
He ran his hand across his scalp.
There are some things I haven't told you. Sometimes a man in my position...
The commander wavered as if making a painful confession.
Sometimes a man in my position is forced to lie to the people he loves. Today was one of those days.
He eyed her sadly.
What I'm about to tell you, I never planned to have to say to you or to anyone.
Susan felt a chill. The commander had a deadly serious look on his face. There was obviously some aspect of his agenda to which she was not privy. Susan sat down. There was a long pause as Strathmore stared at the ceiling, gathering his thoughts.
Susan,
he finally said, his voice frail.
I have no family.
He returned his gaze to her.
I have no marriage to speak of. My life has been my love for this country. My life has been my work here at the NSA.
Susan listened in silence.
As you may have guessed, he continued, I planned to retire soon. But I wanted to retire with pride. I wanted to retire knowing that I'd truly made a difference.
But you have made a difference, Susan heard herself say. You built Translator.
Strathmore didn't seem to hear.